everybody. I'm Kristen. I'm an alcoholic. First of all, I want to thank the committee. I want to thank Holly and all the committee members. I'm humbled and I'm honored to be able to share the misery that was my life, that turned into hope when I not came into AA, but when I surrendered finally to the program. My sobriety date is October 28th, 2007. I'm scared like you are in a ship. So I have this little guy Happy here. So Holly told me to put him up here. So I remember to speak slowly because I tend to talk fast when I get scared. So okay, I come from a family where alcoholism and drug abuse is very prominent. I was born in Southern California, and I'm the oldest of three children. My parents were married really young. And they divorced when I was 3 years old. My sister and I went and lived with my mom in San Diego, and my brother eventually went to go live with my dad in Northern California. Growing up, my sister and I had very little contact with my dad or my brother, and I would say that extended all the way through my teens, 20s, and even into my early 30s. So I really didn't have a great relationship with either of them. I had a little bit of a relationship with my brother, but certainly not really with my father so much. It's important to note that before I go on, I have huge chunks of time missing from my story. I don't know if it's because of trauma or if it's because I drank and used like a mad woman. I don't know, and it doesn't really matter. What I do know without a doubt is how I felt before I came into AA and how I felt since I've been in AA, and that's what I want to share with you tonight. I would say that I had a fairly difficult childhood, not unlike probably many people here, in that I was sexually, emotionally, and physically abused by my mom's second husband. She married him really quickly after her and my dad divorced when I was three, and that abuse started, I would say, and again, I'm really kind of guessing, it's from the ages of 6 until about 11. Also during this time, I was relentlessly bullied and picked on at school. I had a terrible time making friends, and so if you can just imagine how, you know, devastating my self-esteem was. I had no self-esteem. And even today, when I don't have good memories of this period in my life, no good memories. And even when I look at pictures of myself, which there weren't many, my mom did not take many pictures. When I look at pictures of myself during this time, it's still hurtful, and it hurts right here. So I mean, it's still painful. You know, I'm 47 years old, and that was a long time ago, but it's still painful. I remember hating myself so much during these grade school years that I actually hated the sound of my name being called out in school. I would cringe when the teachers would call it out, and I couldn't wait until I could change my name if I ever got, you know, when I got married, which wasn't until I was 45, so. I love my last name now, honey. Basically, what I remember about that time, and actually, through the time, through my teens and my early 20s, is how ashamed I felt, just for the mere fact that I was alive, and how much I hated myself. I took my first drink at 14. I was primed to be an alcoholic, and I drank alcoholically from the very first drink. My dad is an alcoholic. He's a professed alcoholic, but doesn't go to the program. My brother was an addict and an alcoholic. All four of my grandparents actually were alcoholic. So it's pretty rampant in my family. Like I said, I took my first drink at 14. I got so drunk that I fell down a flight of stairs, I twisted an ankle, I threw up, I had a hangover for 2 days, and I couldn't wait to do it again. I could not wait to do it again, because the minute I took that drink, it made me feel like I never felt before in my life. I felt like I was somebody. I felt like I was pretty, I felt like I was popular, I felt like I was smart. It was all those things that in my mind, I wasn't. But that alcohol took it away. That alcohol gave me that feeling, and I knew that I found my answer. And that was my answer until I was 38 when I got sober. The minute it's all of my fears, insecurities, and horrible thoughts about myself went away, and I drank whenever I could, whenever I could get my hands on it. And it was also the time that I started making really terrible decisions, which lasted my entire 24-year drinking and using history. And the one instance that comes to mind is I grew up in Southern California. We're very close to the Mexican border, Tijuana. And during that, during that time in the late 80s, lots of kids would go down there because the drinking age was 18, like it is here. And the drinking age in California was 21, so kids would go down, they'd cross the border, and, you know, nobody would look at an ID because they wanted American dollars down there. They did not give a crap. But, you know, just like it is today, it's a very, very dangerous place. You know, the drug cartels, you have a lot of corruption. People disappeared all the time. It was a really scary place, but you know what? Of course, when you're young and you're drunk and, I didn't think about that. So the first and only time I ever went to Mexico, I was 17 years old, and I went with a big group of people. And there must have been like 10 or 15 of us. I didn't drive. I didn't have my own car, so I drove with somebody. We parked our cars and walked across. So we parked them on the American side and walked across the border. I didn't pay attention to where, you know, how to get back across the border, okay? We got to a bar, and of course, you know, instantly I'm drunk. And I found a boy that was really cute, and of course I started dancing with him and, you know, hanging out with him all night. A couple hours go by, and I said, you know, I gotta go back to the table with my friends. I went back to this table where 15 people were sitting. There's nobody there. So there I am, 17 years old, an American female teenager left stranded, no way home to get across the border. Now, it's a little bit different because Mexico is a third world country. You just go over the border, I mean, you're in a first world country, so it's completely different. Luckily, you know, nobody that I was with even knew that I was gone because they were all drunk too. Luckily, the guy that I've been dancing with and his uncle, who lived relatively close to where I lived, they ended up taking me home at like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I had to explain to my mother why I was coming home. It was a disaster. I look back on that decision often, and I am just amazed that I didn't get raped, that I didn't get that I'm not dead, that something terrible didn't happen. But again, I mean, that's just an example of the kinds of decisions that I made my entire life. You know, I had no thought of my own self-preservation. I drank alcoholically from the very first drink, and I was a blackout drinker. My first drunk was I blacked out. My last drunk at 38, I blacked out. There's a guy from my home group that says alcoholics are egomaniacs with inferiority complexes. And that was me. I was self-will run riot. I was a complete disaster on the inside. But I felt like as long as my outsides looked good, that I had everybody fooled. As long as I looked okay, you know what, that I was fine. And somehow during this entire career, I had two long-term, very successful careers. So I was able to hold a job. So I guess that makes me a high-functioning alcoholic, just because I had a job. But I wouldn't say that I was high-functioning at all. I was just a disaster. Alcohol was my best friend. It was the answer to all my problems, although it was starting to be the root of all my problems. I thought I was drinking to feel good. But it was really just an avenue for my destructive behavior because I hated myself that much. I didn't realize how much I hated myself. I didn't have to think about it when I drank, and that's why I drank so much. But I hid it. I hid it really well. I think when I finally came into the program, there was many people in my family that had no idea that I had a drinking problem. I don't even know how that's possible, but it's true. This drinking continued into my late 20s, and at 28, I was introduced to another substance that I got addicted to. Now, I know this is AA, and we talk about alcohol in AA, but I am an addict, and I have that monster of addiction that lives inside me, so anything that I can put into my body that makes me feel differently than I feel, if I like it, I'm going to do it. So it is part of my story, so I'm going to tell you about it. Basically, I got introduced to methamphetamine, and I was a daily methamphetamine user for 2 years, from the age of 28 to 30. I still drank during that time, very little though, because then it kind of like messed with your buzz a little bit. So I drank to go to sleep after I'd been up for 3 days. Yeah, it was a mess. But that drug took me down so fast. It took me to such a dark and scary place. I fell into a very, very deep depression, and I got to the point that I wanted to kill myself. I just didn't know how to do it. And I was scared to do it. I just knew I didn't want to live anymore. So through the grace of God, because there is no other way that I can explain it, knowing the kind of addict I am, I was able to put down that drug and never go back to it. But I couldn't stop drinking. I could not stop drinking. But only this time now, I was taking antidepressants because the psychiatrist that I went to, you know, because of my depression, put me on, and I didn't tell him about my addiction problem, you know, and probably would have prescribed them. But I was taking a lot of antidepressants while I was drinking, and the drinking got worse. The drinking got worse. From the age of 30 to 38 and that was 2007 when I got sober, my drinking continued to be so out of control, and my life became so unmanageable, that more unmanageable than it had ever been. I got a DUI, I totaled a car in a drunk driving accident. Thank God, I walked away, but the car looked like nobody could have survived. Grace of God. I filed for bankruptcy. I continued to damage relationships, and I picked up yet a third addiction, and that's to gambling. I worked in the casino business for 14 years, drinking, using, and gambling, and smoking all go together. They all go together. Anything that makes me feel different than I am, and that adrenaline pumping through me, now that I'm off the meth, and I'm still drinking, I don't even know what my serotonin levels look like. But I know that I got a rush from gambling. And that one, I mean, that took me down real quick, too. So I did have to file for bankruptcy on that. And the best way that I can describe this is I remember sitting in a casino in 2001, and it was about 12 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was probably on my third cocktail, and I looked around the casino. I didn't notice this when I walked in, but I looked around the casino, and I noticed there was like five customers in the whole place. And I'm like, that's weird. It's kind of creepy, actually. Like, there's me playing blackjack by myself, and like four people playing slot machines. And so I looked at the blackjack dealer, and I said, God, where is everybody? I mean, this is so weird. Why is it so dead? And I will never forget the look on her face. I mean, it was kind of that incredulous look, and she said, well, she says, probably people are at home glued to the television, you know, watching what happened this morning. I looked at her, I thought, what the hell happened this morning, right? I don't want to say it, but, you know, I got up from the table, and I went and found a television, and what had happened is that two planes flew into the World Trade Center. And I get goosebumps when I tell this story, because I had no friggin' idea what was going on around me. That's the kind of drunk I was. You know, and I felt like I was the only person in the whole world, maybe besides those four other people playing the slot machines that didn't know what was going on. That went on for six more years. Okay? Six more years. When people talk about their bottoms, everybody's bottom is different. Looking back at the night of my last drunk, it was really tame and it was so undramatic compared to all the wreckage I'd accumulated and the consequences I racked up in my illustrious 24-year career. And I don't really know why this particular night I had just, this was it for me, but it was. I was living with a boyfriend, and you know, he was really kind of ragging on me about my drinking, and I started hiding alcohol all over the house, just so, you know, I could sneak it. I had bottles hidden everywhere, and what I would do is, I thought I was really smart, because we always think we're smart. I would buy bottles of Merlot, drink half of it, and then fill it up with water. Now it's rosé, right? Like he's not gonna notice. The thing is I proceeded this night to have, I had a half gallon, a bottle of vodka in my bedroom closet, and I drank the whole thing, and I blacked out. And the next morning I woke up, I wonder if he knew I was drunk, right? Because we always think it's not as bad as it really is, right? You know, when he got up, he said, "Where the hell did you get alcohol? You know, you didn't leave the house last night. Where did you find the alcohol?" And you know what? I was just done. I was done. I was so humiliated with what I had to show him. And I showed him all the places I had the water, all the places that I had all the alcohol hidden. And I said, "I'm done. I'm just done." And I checked myself into a 28-day rehab the next Monday. What you need to understand is that I did not get sober because I wanted a better life. I didn't even know that was possible. I didn't even know how bad my life was, really. But it was so small, and it was, I mean, I was so self-centered. It was unbelievable. I stopped drinking because I couldn't deal with the consequences anymore. I couldn't wake up because now, I mean, I blacked out every single time I drank. I couldn't wake up wondering if I had money in my checking account, whether if I drove and killed somebody, because I wouldn't remember it. I couldn't remember if I pissed one of my friends off, or, you know, I could not. If I took one drink, it was a crapshoot whether or not I was going to drink one or 21. I mean, anything could happen. So it was the consequences that made me stop. When I stopped, I had this huge hole. It felt like a huge hole inside of me. And that huge hole stayed with me for years in the program, actually. Back then, the thought of never drinking again was way too much for me to even fathom. It's still too much for me to fathom almost 9 years later. I don't think about it like that. I just have today, because it's easier for me. You know, keep it simple, stupid. You know, because I can think myself into all kinds of great ideas, and as we all can. Once the alcohol was removed from me, I had no idea who I was. I had no idea where I fit in, and I had no idea what I was supposed to do, and it scared the shit out of me. In the first 2 years, that was in 2007, October 28th, 2007. The first 2 years of AA, I didn't drink. I went to a lot of meetings. I had sponsors. I had three sponsors in 2 years. I took commitments, but I didn't do much step work, because the reason I had three sponsors in 2 years is because every time we'd get to a step where the word God was mentioned, or the idea of God was mentioned, I instantly fired them. And that's a problem because it starts in step two. So, you know, I would lie and say, "Oh, yeah, yeah, you know, I'm coming to believe. Oh, I'm turning my will over. Oh, yeah, let's get to step four." I wasn't working the program. I was going to a shitload of meetings. And I was taking, the thing that kept me sober was the commitments, or were the commitments. I didn't open my mouth in a meeting. I think the first time I opened my mouth in a meeting was when I took my first year chip, and I actually got a resentment at that meeting. So I never went back. But it was a year before I spoke. But what kept me sober was that I took commitments. I knew that if I was a coffee girl or if I was a literature chick, you had to talk to me because alcoholics like coffee, right? And I would hear things like, let us love you before you love yourself, before you can love yourself. And I didn't believe that shit. I didn't believe it for a second because I hated myself that much. There's no way that you could love me. But I just kept coming. I kept coming. Didn't do any step work. And was fucking miserable. So at 2.5 years sober, I was on the precipice. I was at a crossroads. You know what? I don't want to stay sober if I'm going to be this miserable. This is not worth it. This is not what I signed up for. I'd rather drink. Or I had to get this spirituality thing. And I better get it quick. I have to surrender. By the way, at this time, remember that brother I told you about that we didn't have a lot of contact over the years? Well, he was also an addict and an alcoholic and had tried many times to get sober, couldn't stay sober. And ultimately, at this moment, he committed suicide because as a direct result of this disease. So again, I was very scared. I didn't want to die. I just couldn't go on living the way I was living. So there was a lady in my home group that, I'll tell you, this woman looks like an angel. She still looks like an angel. And when she speaks about God, it's not in a religious way. When she speaks about the steps, you know, I would get so excited when she would start to share because she had always something so awesome to share. But I was too afraid to ask her to sponsor me because she had like 8 sponsees. You know, and I was such a mess. Whatever, all her sponsees, they were all in my home group and they were just as happy as clams. I mean, but I knew it can't be all bullshit, right? I mean, she has to be giving them something, you know, and I want that. I want that. Maybe she can teach me how to love, how to let God in. And so I asked her, and I was so afraid when I asked her because I thought she was going to say no. And I went up and I said, oh, Julie. And I had tears in my eyes. I said, I'm desperate. Will you please sponsor me? And she said, what took you so long? She knew before I knew. And she's still my sponsor to this day. And that was at 2.5 years. I did everything that she told me. Even if I didn't like it, even if I didn't agree with it, even if I didn't understand it, I did every single thing that she told me. And I never had that pink cloud like people talk about. But slowly but surely, that hole that was left inside of me started filling up. And I can't tell you when it filled up. I can't tell you the date. I just didn't feel it anymore. I didn't feel that terrible pain anymore. What I didn't expect from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a transformation in my thinking and my life. The promises. You know, I didn't really expect that from me. What the program and the steps have done for me is they've given me back my self-esteem, a self-esteem that I never had. I can look in the mirror today and I like who I see and I like the woman that I'm becoming. It was so difficult to bring God into my life in the beginning not because I thought he abandoned me, because I thought I abandoned him. And there's no way that he could love me and there's no way that he could forgive me. But that's my ego talking. Through all the step work I've done, that's my ego talking. And that's me keeping my distance from God. And it's all crap. It's all crap. Today, I work on my character defects. I work on my resentments. I continue to work on my resentments. There's still some that linger. And I've cleaned up the wreckage of my past. And that dad that I told you about, the one that's an alcoholic that doesn't go to the program, he was on, I've done the steps all the way through, at least 4 different times. He's never been on my 8th or my 9th step in the first 3 times I did him all the way through. He was on my 4th, 9th, 8th, and 9th step. Because what I realized, I was so gently put to me, is that I also have a part in that relationship. And I wasn't allowing him to have a relationship with me. And knowing that he's an alcoholic, I know how we think. You know, it's hard to repair. Where do you even begin to repair a relationship that's 35 years, or well, at that point, it was, you know, almost 40 years. 40 years old, and you can't even talk to your daughter. You don't even know who your daughter is. But when I went to him with my 9th step, and I apologized for my part in our relationship, something changed. Something changed. He started crying. The man never cries. The man never cries. He started crying, and I think what it allowed him to do was to release the guilt. I allowed him, by me going to him and cleaning up my wreckage, for him to release the guilt. And now we have a relationship today that I never thought we were going to have. You know, I think when little girls, they dream about their wedding. Well, I really wasn't one of those little girls. I really never thought I was going to get married. And the little girls, they dream about their dads walking them down the aisle. I never had that dream. I never had that dream. But in 2014, when I met my husband, who, by the way, is God-given, there's no way that this guy would have dug me. And there's no way I would have deserved him. No way. I know, my brown isn't him. Oh. There's no way I would have deserved him, there's no way I could have received the love that I get from him until I was at this point in my recovery. But my dad was able to walk me down the aisle, and I actually have pictures of it. It's terrific. I'm almost done. In early sobriety, you know, you hear things that you kind of take with you. We hear a lot of these, you know, keep it simple, you know, keep coming back. You know, you hear things. The one thing that I heard in early sobriety that I've kept with me all these years is that if you want self-esteem, you have to do esteemable things. And that's what I do today. That's what I try to do today. I try to live the principles of the program in all assets or in all areas of my life. I try to treat people in the right way. I bring God with me everywhere. I have a relationship with God that I never thought was possible. I mean, if you, there's just no way. If you would have told me 5 years ago that I'd be sitting here at a convention in the Netherlands talking about God and my story, I would have told you that you were nuts. There's no way. You know, I have a terrible fear of public speaking. When I was at UCLA, I was a communication major, and I wanted to be a reporter. I wanted to be a news anchor. And I took my first class, my first public speaking class, and I got up in front of the class, and I froze. And I turned around immediately, walked out of the class, and changed my major to English. Oh, I could have been an NFL reporter, but it's okay. You know what? I don't work a perfect program, but I figure if I'm better, a little bit better today than I was yesterday, and maybe tomorrow I'll be better than I am today, I'm going in the right direction. The last thing I'm going to leave you with, only because I know it firsthand, is that if you are not actively working on your recovery, you are actively working on your relapse. Thank you so much for allowing me to share a little bit of myself with you tonight. Thank you.